In early May of 2024, the German government formally blamed a Russian hacking group called APT28 for hacking members of the governing German Social Democratic Party in 2023 and warned of unnamed consequences. Those consequences may apply to just APT28, which is also sometimes called Fancy Bear, or they may apply to the Russian government, as like many Russian-based hacking groups, APT28 often operates hand in glove with the Russian military intelligence service, which allows the Russian government to deny involvement in all sorts of attacks on all sorts of targets, while covertly funding and directing the actions of these groups. APT28 reportedly also launched attacks against German defense, aerospace, and information technology companies, alongside other business entities and agencies involved, even tangentially, with Ukraine and its defense measures against Russia's invasion. This hacking effort allegedly began in early 2022, shortly after Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and the head of the Russian embassy in Germany has been summoned to account for these accusations, though based on prior attacks and allegations related to them by Russia's intelligence agencies and the hacking groups it uses as proxies, that summoning is unlikely to result in anything beyond a demonstration of anger on the part of the German government, formally registered with Russia's representative in Berlin. For its part, Russia's government has said that it was in no way involved in any incidents of the kind the German government describes, though Germany's government seems pretty confident in their assessment on this at this point, having waited a fair while to make this accusation, and utilizing its partnerships with the US, UK, Canada, and New Zealand to confirm that attribution. This accusation has been leveled amidst a wave of similar attacks, also allegedly by Russia and its proxies, against other targets in the EU and NATO, including but not limited to the Czech Republic, Lithuania, Poland, Slovakia, and Sweden. Many of these attacks have apparently made use of an at-the-time unknown security flaw in Microsoft software that gave them access to compromised email accounts for long periods of time, allowing them to, among other things, scoop up intelligence reports from folks in the know in these countries, sifting their messages for data that would help Russia's forces in Ukraine. This group and other Russia GRU, their intelligence service, proxies have reportedly targeted government and critical infrastructure targets in at least 10 NATO countries since the fourth quarter of 2023 alone, according to analysis by Palo Alto Networks. And experts in this space have said they are concerned these sorts of attacks, while often focused on intelligence cleaning and at times embarrassing their targets, may also be part of a larger effort to weaken and even hobble intelligence, military, and critical infrastructure networks in nations throughout the region, which could over time reduce stability in these countries, increase extremism, and possibly even prevent them from defending themselves or their neighbors in the event of a more formal attack by Russian forces. What I'd like to talk about today is another sort of attack, allegedly also launched by Russia against their neighbors in this part of the world, but this one a little less well reported upon at this point, despite it potentially being even more broadly impactful. You're listening to Let's Know Things. I'm Colin Wright. Learn more about Let's Know Things, subscribe to receive free email updates, and or become a supporter to receive monthly bonus episodes at letsknowthings.com. The Global Positioning System, or GPS, was originally developed in 1973 by the U.S. Department of Defense. Its first satellite was launched in 1978, and its initial complete constellation of 24 satellites were in orbit and functional in 1993. This satellite network's full functionality was only available to the U.S. military until 2000, when then-President Bill Clinton announced that it would be opened up for civilian use as well. This allowed aviation and similar industries to start using it on the vehicles and other assets that they make use of, and normal everyday people were thenceforth able to buy devices that tapped this network to help them figure out where in the world they were and how to get to and from wherever they wanted to go. A high-level explanation of how GPS works is that all of these satellites contain atomic clocks that are incredibly stable and which remain synchronized with each other, all showing the exact same, very precise time. These satellites broadcast signals that indicate what time their clocks currently read. GPS devices, as long as they can connect to the signals broadcast by at least a few of these satellites, and they're positioned in orbit to make sure that will usually be the case, they can figure out where they are located by noting the tiny differences in the time between these broadcasts that they're tapping into. Signals from satellites that are further away will take longer to arrive, and that time difference will be noted by a given device, which then allows it to triangulate a geolocation based on the distance between the device and those several satellites. This is a simple concept that has created a world in which most personal electronic devices now contain the right hardware and software to tap these satellite signals, compute these sorts of distances, and then casually place us via our smartphones and cars and computers and watches on the world map in a highly accurate fashion. This type of technology has proven to be so useful that even before it was made available for civilian use, catalyzing the world that we live in today, other governments were already investing in their own version of the same, their own satellite networks, most predicated on the same general concept. They wanted their own constellation of satellites and technologies, though, just in case, because the GPS network could theoretically be locked down by the US government at some point, and because they wanted to make sure they had their own militarizable version of the technology as well, should they need it. There are also flaws in the US GPS system that makes it less ideal for some use cases and in some parts of the world. So some GPS copycats fill in the blanks on some of those flaws, while others operate better at some latitudes than vanilla GPS does. All of which brings us to recent troubles that the global aviation industry has had in some parts of the world related to their flight tracking systems. Most modern aircraft use some kind of global navigation satellite system, which includes GPS, but also Europe's Galileo, Russia's GLONASS, and China's Baidu, among other competitors. These signals can sometimes be interrupted or made fuzzy by natural phenomena like solar flares and the weather, and all of these systems have their own peculiarities and flaws. And sometimes the hardware systems they use to lock onto these signals, or the software they use to compute a location based on them, will go haywire for normal technology misbehaving reasons. Beginning in the 1990s, though, we began to see electronic countermeasures oriented toward messing with these global navigation satellite system technologies. These countermeasures, often called satellite navigation deceivers, are used by pretty much every government on the planet alongside a slew of non-government actors that engage in military or terrorist activities. And they operate using a variety of jamming methods, but most common is basically throwing out a bunch of signals that look like GPS or other navigation system signals. And this has the practical effect of rendering those gadgets basically unusable because they don't know which signal is legit and which one is garbage. A bit like blasting loud noises to keep people from talking to each other, messing with their communication capacity. It's also possible to engage in what is called GPS spoofing, which means instead of throwing out gobs of garbage signals trying to cloud the system with noise, you actually send just a few very precise signals that are intended to look legit and to be accepted by, for instance, a plane's GPS device, which then makes the aircraft's navigation systems think the plane is somewhere other than it is. Maybe just a little bit off course, maybe on the other side of the planet. Notably, neither of these sorts of attacks are actually that hard to pull off anymore, and it's possible to build a GPS jamming device at home if you really want to, though spoofing is a bit more difficult. Also worth knowing is that while making your own jammer is absolutely frowned upon by most governments, and it's actually illegal in the US and the UK, Across most of the world, it's kind of a Wild West in this regard, and you can generally get away with making one if you want to, though there's a chance you'll still be arrested if you cause any real trouble with it. And it is possible to cause trouble with these things. Most pilots and crew are aware of how these devices work, and they can watch for their effects using backup tools to keep tabs on their locations when they need to. But those backup tools require a lot more effort and attention, and there's a chance that if they're hit by these sorts of issues at a bad moment, when they're distracted by other things, or when they're coming in for a landing, or attempting to navigate safely around other aircraft, that could present a dangerous situation. That is why, until May 31st, 2024, at the minimum, Finnair will no longer be flying to Tartu Airport, which is a very small airport in Estonia, but it's home to the Baltic Defense College, which is one of NATO's educational hubs, and losing a daily flight to Tartu, the only daily flight at this particular airport, from Helsinki, will disconnect this area, via plane at least, from the rest of Europe, which is inconvenient and embarrassing. This daily flight was canceled because of ongoing disruptions to the airport's GPS system, which was previously an on-and-off irregular sort of thing, but which since 2022, when Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, has become a lot more consistent and a lot worse. And Tartu relies exclusively on GPS for planes landing at the airport, and thus it does not have another fallback system if GPS fails at a vital, dangerous moment. Which is uncommon at airports, but because it's so small, that's the case at this particular airport. This is a running theme throughout the Baltic region, an area populated by now democratic NATO members that were formerly part of the Soviet Union, and which are considered to be at risk of a Russian invasion or other sort of attack if the invasion of Ukraine goes Russia's way. Almost all aircraft flying through this area have experienced GPS jamming issues since 2022. And though that Finnair flight is the only one to have been canceled as a result of all this jamming so far, there are concerns that this could really scramble travel and shipping in the region, as it's making all flying in the area that much more risky on a continuous basis. Finland's government is framing this jamming as part of a hybrid warfare effort on Russia's part, alongside other hybrid efforts like busing migrants to Finland's borders in order to strain national coffers and to nudge Finland's politics toward anti-immigration reactionary extremes. Some other nations are thinking along the same lines, though there is a chance that rather than this jamming representing an intentional assault on these neighboring nations, it may actually be something closer to overflow from other nearby jamming activities. Russia jamming GPS signals in Ukraine, for instance, or the governance of the Kaliningrad region, which is a Russian enclave separated from the rest of Russia and surrounded by Poland and Lithuania, those governments engaging in their own localized jamming could cause this kind of overflow effect, those signals being picked up across national borders because that's how these signals work. It's possible we are seeing a bit of both here. Overflow from that huge regional conflict, but also intentional jabs meant to make life more difficult for NATO nations, stressing their systems and costing them money and other resources, while also maybe testing the region's capacity to cope with this kind of GPS disruption and these sorts of blackouts in the event of a potential future conflict. Another point worth making here, though, is that we see a lot of this sort of behavior in conflict zones globally. Flight Radar 24 recently introduced a live GPS jamming map to keep track of this sort of thing. And as of the day I'm recording this, alongside these consistent irregularities in the Baltic region, Ukraine, and parts of Eastern Europe, there is jamming occurring in the Middle East, near Israel, throughout Turkey, which has ongoing conflicts with insurgents in the afflicted areas, a portion of Moldova that is attempting to break away with the support of Russia, similar to what happened in Ukraine back in 2014, a northern portion of India where the Indian government has an ongoing conflict with separatists, and in Myanmar, where the military government is embroiled in fighting with a variety of groups that have unified to overthrow them. This has become common in conflict zones over the past few decades, then, as those who want to deny this data and the capabilities said data grants to their enemies tend to blanket the relevant airwaves with disruptive noise or incorrect location information, rendering the GPS and similar networks less useful or entirely useless thereabouts. In Ukraine, the military has already worked out ways around this noise and false information, incorporating alternative navigation systems into their infrastructure, allowing them to use whichever one is most accurate at any given moment. And it's likely, especially if this dynamic continues, which it probably will, as again, this is a fairly easy thing to accomplish, whatever scale your organization or movement, it's likely that spreading out and becoming less reliant on just one navigation system will probably become more common, or possibly even the de facto setup, which will be beneficial in the sense that each of these systems has its own pros and cons, but perhaps less so in that more satellites will be necessary to keep that larger multi-model network operational at full capacity, and that'll make it more expensive to operate these systems, while also creating more opportunities for satellite collisions up in the relevant orbit. An orbit that's becoming increasingly crowded already, and which has long been packed with an abundance of no longer operational craft that must be dodged and operated around by all of these satellites, current and future. The book I'd like to recommend today is called The Middle Passage, From Misery to Meaning in Midlife by James Hollis. This is an interesting book. It's one of many books about aging and midlife crises and other milestone moments that I read as I was building up to writing my book about aging, How to Turn 39. And it comes from the world of Jungian psychology and Jungian analysis. So for some people, some of the arguments made in this book might be more convincing than for others, but the baseline conception of this book is asking the question of why so many of us experience so much tumult and disruption in our middle years, which is a concept that has changed over the years as we've grown in terms of our health span and lifespan. But why is it that around that time, whatever the number of years that happens to represent at a given moment and in a given culture, why do so many of us experience these midlife crises? And why do we experience all the things we experience at these moments as crises? It also gets into concepts about what self is and our conception of self, why we perceive ourselves in a certain way, why we tend to think of ourselves in terms of our accomplishments and responsibilities, and how that might play into these crises that we tend to experience in those middle years, and then also how we might revise our sense of self, given all of this. Now, if any of that sounds interesting to you, consider picking up a copy of The Middle Passage, From Misery to Meaning in Midlife by James Hollis. You can subscribe to receive email updates, find show notes and other such content, and support this show financially, receiving additional bonus episodes as a thank you at letsknowthings.com. Learn more about me and my work at colin.io. Subscribe to my other news-focused podcast, One Sentence News, wherever you get your pods, or at onesentencenews.com, and say howdy on social media. I'm at Colin is my name on Instagram and Twitter, and Colin Wright on Facebook and YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Colin Wright, and I'll talk to you again next week.